Hey everyone, welcome to Untucked. This is our final episode of 2019. On Coach's Corner, we are going to be talking about stock market predictions. Then we're going to discuss the FIRE movement, financially independent, retire early. And finally, we'll get into how expensive it is to have and raise kids. We hope you enjoy. We hope you have a wonderful holiday season. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in 2020. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect the opinions or views of FC Advisory, the Financial Coach Group, or the New Wealth Project. Nothing discussed on this podcast should be interpreted as investment advice. Welcome to the final Untucked episode of this decade.
Wow. That is intense. Hey, everyone. This is Jeff.
And Mike's here.
I guess it's important to point out, though, that we've only been doing this for like 6 months. So the decade is really not missing
much. It's a big episode, Meg. This is our Christmas edition, right?
I guess Christmas part two.
Okay. Do you guys know the tradition of kissing under the mistletoe started in ancient Greece? During the festival of Saturnalia, and later in marriage ceremonies because of the plant's association with fertility. So that's why we do it.
Fun. Fun, fun.
Do people still do it?
I don't think I ever have done it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think so.
Do you guys hang a mistletoe?
No.
No.
All right. Moving on.
Birds. Big game on Sunday. Should we talk about Sunday as opposed to last Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Talk about the Cowboys game as opposed to the Redskins game.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys game can be spoken about in reference to the Redskins game.
What?
Because,
wait, why are you sitting?
Because I think Carson Wentz orchestrating two comeback drives to win games against, was it the Giants and the Redskins back-to-back, is going to propel them into a better position to beat the Cowboys this Sunday at the link.
Look at that analysis.
Well thought out. Very prepared.
Orchestrate, propel.
So I was watching, I was getting a haircut, and the ESPN guys were on, like, Stephen A. and somebody else, an ex-player, I didn't recognize him, but he was ripping. Basically saying if the Cowboys don't blow the Eagles out, then Jason Garrett needs to be fired. The Eagles are so bad. And Dak is a 100 times better leader than Wentz.
Who was saying this?
I don't know.
Jason Garrett, he's gone anyway. It doesn't matter what the Cowboys do the rest of the season, unless they win the Super Bowl, which isn't going to happen.
You really think he's gone?
He's gone. Absolutely.
I think Jerry Jones needs a puppet, and Jason Garrett plays that role so well. No one's ever actually coached the Cowboys. Maybe right. That old
Landry.
White guy. No. What was the guy?
Jimmy Johnson.
Landry.
No, with white hair.
Jimmy Johnson.
No. The Cowboys.
Jimmy Johnson. Johnson.
No. The other one. Big guy. Parcells?
Yeah. Parcells.
See? Thanks, guys.
Okay. Well,
Meg doesn't know who
hair.
Landry is.
Or Jimmy Johnson.
Or Jimmy Johnson. Yeah.
Clearly you don't know who Jimmy Johnson is. I think the Eagles, I'm gonna make my prediction, the Eagles win on Sunday.
Wait. Have you predicted the other, like the opposite the last like 3 weeks?
Yeah. No, I don't really remember. I just know that I think it's a long shot. I think Dallas is a better team from a talent standpoint. Not at quarterback. I think Carson's a better quarterback. Zeke, we cannot stop him. When Zeke plays for Dallas, they're 5-0 against us.
But I think the Eagles are okay against the run, which means Dallas will pick apart this brutal secondary. I think it's going to be one of those where at the end of the game, it's going to be like, our D-backs suck.
Amari Cooper has like a career day.
He did that earlier this season against us.
Have another one.
We'll see. I mean, I think, again, Carson's probably smelling himself a little bit now, which is good. And it's going to be at the link. Everyone's going to be drunk. 4:30 start. They're going to get down there at 8 o'clock in the morning.
It is going to be a rowdy crowd.
Yeah, and it's like winner goes to the playoffs, basically. I think it's mathematically that's the deal.
Okay.
Is that the case?
I'm not 100%.
Can they blow it in week 16? if they win?
I don't know, because then they'd have the same record, and they would be push on the head-to-head.
And then it's common opponent?
It's common opponent, and we beat them there. So I think we're in if we win. I hope it's not a blowout. I hope the Cowboys don't destroy us, because I can see that happening. But I'll take the birds. I'm taking the birds.
Yeah, I'm taking the birds.
I'm going Cowboys on this one by 17.
Okay. Mike, with the actual, like the rational.
Yeah, pick. Not the, I'm a Philadelphia sports fan. I'm just going to hope for the best.
Yeah. Trains, you were down at the Fly Guys last night. How'd it go, man?
Yeah, good. Blew out the Sabres.
Are the Sabres a good team?
They are not really. They have a stud in Jack Eichel, who was a late scratch.
Oh, so no way. I didn't know that.
It's kind of a shame. I wanted to see him in person. They're just lost without that guy. So they're but the Flyers got a lot of lucky bounces. It wasn't – they dominated the game. They won 6-1. It was fun. Fun seeing some goals, seeing some of these kids up close. It was awesome.
Good.
I said to Jeff today, financial coach representatives at the Flyers game equals 6-1 wins.
Oh, yeah.
We're 2-2.
That's right. There you go.
I'll stay away.
Although, it's just not worth it for me. I mean, it's nearly 2 hours to get there from where we are. It's just such a process and not a fun one to get to and from.
And you had great seats, a parking pass, and food and booze on the house, right?
Yeah.
And you still left, and today we're talking about it kind of negatively.
Yeah. I mean, the negatives kind of overwhelmed the positives for me, even with everything else being great.
Your description of the evening to me, your excursion down to the Wells Fargo Center, enjoying a 6-1 Flyers win, and then the travel back, pretty much solidified the fact that you've gotten old.
Maybe you can look at it that way, but I think anybody would be like, I took 3.5 hours in my car to watch
not a
2.5 hour game.
Not a 22 year old. No. They love it. They love every aspect of it.
Okay.
We're just getting old, man. And
don't say we. Don't sorry, lump sorry. Me.
Mike and I are just getting old. And the thought to go down to a game, like I was saying to you earlier, like somebody's like, hey, I got 2 tickets for the game now. You want to go? Immediately I go, all right, so it's a 7 o'clock puck drop, leave my house, I guess at like 5:30, get crushed in traffic, watch the game. If they don't win, I'm miserable, and then I'm going to get home and walk in my door at like 11:30. No, thank you.
If you can leave an hour earlier, I think it's a game changer. Like if I was able to leave an hour earlier and not deal with that much traffic and have time to breathe when you get there instead of running in for puck drop, okay, yeah. I can get with that.
So how do we feel about the Flyers for the season so far? Are we positioned well?
Very hard to say because of they've dealt with serious injuries and the horrible Lindblom situation.
Do you know about this? Oscar Lindblom?
Yeah, cancer, right?
Yeah, bone cancer.
Yeah, I mean they should be in the mix. I mean, there's no reason to think that by the end that they won't be a playoff team. Carter Hart definitely, I think, is showing that he is the guy, even though he struggled a little bit early. Yep. And if not this year, next year, absolutely. Absolutely.
You said this was a playoff year, man.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mean like, okay, maybe they lose in the first round, whatever. But
all right.
They're fun to watch, I think. They're fun to watch. Sixers?
Did
Meg?
It.
Jeff?
I mean, we can get right into our normal argument if you want to. After the Sixers, who did they play? The Heat. Jimmy Butler back in town. Did you watch that game, Mike?
I missed it.
Okay.
I missed it. I forget what I was doing, but I missed the game.
Embiid had a great line.
New Year's resolution. I will watch one Flyers game a week if you watch one Sixers game a week.
Okay. I can probably get on board with that.
Okay.
So Jimmy Butler was back in town for the second time this season. Plays for the Heat now. And Embiid had a great statistical night. 22 points, 15 rebounds. I mean, you can't ask for anything more. So pissed off. They lost. They lost the game. And Ben had, I think, you know, a double-double like he always does.
They're 20-9 on the season. They're 14-1 at home.
They did not play well against the Miami Heat collectively. Embiid, despite his line, was not good. Ben was kind of irrelevant. Josh Richardson was brutal for three quarters. So, yeah, they lost.
Can I ask a legit question?
Mm-hmm.
Why is home court advantage such a real thing in basketball? Home field in football, you get it. You got your crowd. You have all that. Like, that helps you with noise and just being in front of you. Like, that's different. There's not a huge home ice advantage in hockey. Generally, there's a slight one, but it's not huge. But basketball, like, that's normal, right? Why?
I mean, I think the crowd's a big part of it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the fourth quarter, your fans have the Wendy's signs behind the net waving when the guy's taking a foul shot.
So, yeah, I mean, think about basketball. Think about how close they are. Do you know what I mean? Like, to the actual, like, fans, how close they are to the court. I think that's why. I mean,
so
I think
they have kind of rabbit ears more than other guys?
I think
other,
so.
Yeah. Other athletes, and they get rattled?
Yeah.
You know who doesn't get rattled? Kawhi Leonard.
Well, he's a robot. He's not a human.
I think I'm being a dick, and I don't mean to be a dick, but it's been my beef with the Sixers, and it's going to be my beef, is they're just not going to win the way they're structured right now. And like watching the end of that Heat game, there's 12 seconds left. The Sixers are down two. They foul a guy, I forget his name. He goes in a line for the Heat, misses both free throws. Sixers have no timeouts left. Ben Simmons gets the rebound, drives down the court, gets to like the lane. He's got one defender on him. And instead of like, hey, I'm going to take it strong, he cowers and he kicks it out to Al Horford at the three-point line, who bricks a three-pointer. Game over, we lose. Like, Ben, take it strong. The reason he doesn't is because he's afraid to get fouled because he can't make a freaking free throw.
He was like 6 for 6 in the line in that game.
I know. Then just go drive, man. You might get lucky and make it and the foul, and you win the game with a free throw.
They're not going to call a foul in that situation.
I know.
Unless it's egregious.
That's why. Why did he kick it out? Why didn't he go all the way in and finish?
Because he was well defended. I mean, I don't disagree. I really don't. That last possession, I think there was nobody. Embiid ran to the corner. Harris ran to the corner. Horford ran to the wing. Richardson was on the wing. Nobody went to the basket except Ben.
No one went to the basket.
And the defense collapsed. And that's how they were willing to lose. They were willing to lose with Al Horford making a three, which didn't happen.
Give me a Euro step, man, and take it. He was literally at the foul line when he kicked out to Horford.
Mm-hmm.
Two steps, layup, tie game, end the foul, make the free throw, we win the game. Like, that's what's frustrating me about the team. They have talent, and mm-hmm. the talent is afraid to be the man. That's why I want Jimmy back.
They have not played this, like, the five that we have, the starting lineup. So, Ben, Josh, Tobias, Al, and Joel have played, like, they've played 30 games. I think they've played 6 together. It's going to take time for that chemistry to be created, to come. It's going to take time, minutes. And right now they're focusing on, you know, Embiid's not playing back-to-backs or not every back-to-back. They're, you know, Richardson's been out because he's been hurt. Like, I'm not trying to make excuses. I just think 30 games in to an 82-game season and you're five – your lineup has barely played like a quarter of those together. Like, I'm cool with it.
That's my issue though. And it's not with the players. It's with the team. It's with the management. Is this, we trusted the process. We went through it and we haven't put a starting five together to stick together in the last 2 years.
But this is intentional. This five not playing together is intentional right now.
No, I'm just saying we need the core five.
We have them.
Stop with this. Jimmy Butler's on the team for half a season. Now he's gone, right? JJ Redick's
Jimmy.
JJ Redick's our guy. He's gone. Like, is this better be our team? This better be our five. I don't want to see like Tobias get traded next year, like, which might happen, right? So that's going to be their problem. Is they're not formulating a starting five, a team that they're going to stick with.
But dude, that's a function of the league. Like, I don't know how. What the Sixers can do, short of being in the luxury tax every year, to make that happen. I mean, JJ got offered more money to go to New Orleans. Like, go get paid, JJ. Like, I mean, I think that's just something that every team deals with, and you have to be willing to and prepared to. And we're not. Like, they're not deep. The Sixers don't have, you know, a bench that allows for the starting five to take legitimate time off. And that's going to be a big issue going to the playoffs. Brett has yet to shorten his bench, which I think is fine, but there's going to come a point in time where Joel has to play and Al has to play and Richardson has to be healthy, because they have to be a one or two seed or they're not going to be in a good position in the playoffs. I just think it's too early to like sound the alarm bells is my only point.
You've been saying that all year.
Yeah, and I'm going to continue saying
they're 1-0. They're 12-2. They're, what are they now, 20-8?
20-9. Yeah. I'm going to say that until they're at game 65.
All right. You heard it here. Game 65. Okay. We'll get a solid opinion from Meg.
All right. Coach's Corner. So it's prediction season. We thought it would be fun to go back to this time last year when anyone and everyone was making market predictions for 2019 and review some of what was said. We got the idea because we came across an article written by Phil Town in, it was last year, right? Like November of last year, I think.
Yeah, November, December of 2018.
And he said that all signs indicate that we're in for a significant stock market correction across the market in 2019, citing, and I quote, sideways movement in 2018 combined with high valuations as the reason for the correction. So we hear a lot of this stuff going into any new calendar year, what analysts, banks, gurus, whatever you want to call them, are anticipating. And we think obviously it's a pretty fruitless exercise, being that it's really hard to make accurate predictions and it's even harder to do it consistently. So we thought it would be fun to just call out some of the people, well-known people, or companies that have made them.
Yeah.
Or made them, I should say.
I don't know why. I guess this is why people do this, right? They make predictions because no one ever goes back and calls them on it. Like this guy, Phil Town, I don't know why you write this article about the market's going to go down in 2019. I mean, he couldn't have been more wrong.
But if you look at the way he wrote the article, and this is how they usually go, he completely hedged every statement he made with, like, for example, he's talking about how this is back in January, you know, valuation, PE ratios are, what did he say?
he threw out the Shiller
26.
Ratio.
And historically, it's been 15 and change. And he uses, like, going back to, like, the 1800s, and which, by the way, the world has changed significantly since then. And maybe there's a reason why PEs should be higher than – that's a whole other issue.
But
he uses that as his basis for, hey, stocks are going to go down, valuations are high, which was like not just him. I mean,
sure,
thousands of prognosticators and professionals were saying the same thing. Well, the ratio now is 31, which means that, you know, that's what's essentially been driving the 25% gain in stocks this year, because investors are willing to pay more for earnings than they were even a year ago. And so we haven't had that decline, but he hedges at the end. He says, wait, although I want to say it's important for those who are already invested, keep in mind that 2019 is not the time to sell stocks that you already own. What?
Yeah.
You just told everyone stocks are going down, dude.
I mean, he said it's far more likely the possibility that we'll see corrections across the market of 20%.
Right.
What?
Crazy.
Well.
Well, what's his pedigree? Like, how come he can make these statements?
He writes a newsletter. He sells seminars and webinars and books, and he's a charlatan who calls himself a hedge fund manager. I looked him up. He has he manages $8 million.
Oh my god!
Which is a couple of friends and family, he claims he's this, you know, hedge fund manager. Right? Anybody can say that. He makes his money by selling people all these, you know, this garbage, which, and he has this tagline. It's called one rule one or something. Yeah. The rule one,
something like that.
Portfolio. Anyway, not to just completely just
right. It's not
shit
just
on
him.
This guy.
Yeah.
But there's so many people like him out there, and so many people follow and believe and just think that they have some insight. we were talking about like getting off of this article and just talking about other predictions in general. Interest rates is always my favorite, right? So 2019, just like 2018 and 17 and 16 and 15 and 14, every year the consensus was rates are going up. Mortgage brokers tell you that when they're trying to sell you a mortgage. You know, look, you better lock it in. Rates are going up. Everyone knows it. Just look at Wall Street's predictions. Right.
Hasn't happened in 12 years.
Right. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, the 2.5% was the, I think, the 5 and then maybe close to the 10-year. It's now like 1.75.
Yeah.
Bonds have done well as a result. And rates have not gone up. I mean.
So the moral of the story is to investors is don't listen to predictions.
Well, no. Here's what I think it is. When people say that the markets are going to correct or that rates are going to go up or something's going to change, they're absolutely right. But when they put a time period on it and they say it's going to happen this year or in 6 months or in 1 month or within whatever period of time, run, ignore. Nobody can predict when it's going to happen. You definitely can predict what's going to happen because it will change. Stocks will go down. Rates are going to change dramatically one day. Just don't know when. And so anybody who follows the advice to the letter of the timing of it and takes action as a result, then, you know, you get what you deserve.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, our clients ask us all the time, like, what do you think is going to happen next year? Like, they want us to predict the market or interest rates. And we just say, look, I have no idea. So let's just make sure what we're like, hey, do you need to buy a car next year?
Yeah.
Well, if you do, now's a really good time to take some cash to go buy your car.
There you go.
Right. Right. The whole prediction game. I mean, I did a little research as far as predictions for 2019.
Yeah, what you got?
I got NBC Boston Sports predicted the offensive rookie of the year. So they had six experts on their panel. So all six experts had to pick the offensive rookie of the year for the NFL. Three of the six took Kyler Murray. Two of the six, he's the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, by the way.
He was
a Heisman winner.
Yeah, okay.
No, but I mean, like, that's why the prediction is.
Two of them took Josh Jacobs, quarterback for the Raiders.
Did he even play?
I don't know. And then one took Deebo Samuel, who I think is a wide receiver for the Niners. And don't even, like, bother looking at ESPN or CBS Sports, like, predictions for records.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
None of them got one. I looked at, I think it was ESPN. They have like a chance of getting the records right for maybe 5 of the 32 teams. Because it's impossible. Like, they had the Eagles at like 11-5. Well, they can't get there. Like, it's impossible. Wish. Stay away from predictions.
Yeah.
People love them, though.
I think, people, I mean, love it. It's crazy. I don't understand it, though. Like, I understand that, you know, your fantasy team or your pick 'em team, like that type of approach. But like meaningful predictions that have an impact on your life.
Right.
Like, you're choosing to make decisions to change things. I guess I'm speaking typically financially, but even like people who bet on, you know, who's going to win the offensive rookie of the year. Like, what is going on in your brain?
Yeah.
Well, that to me, there's if you're doing it for entertainment value purely, that's
I'm mostly fine. Talking about like degenerate gamblers.
Okay. No, I'm with you. That's a whole different scope of But I mean, I think that there are so many people. Like, there was a client I met with the other day who told me that we have 6 months left in this run.
I heard the same thing.
And a 6 month time. I shake my head. I don't try to argue. I don't even argue because, you know, it's utterly ridiculous to put a time period on something like that for anybody, really, for anybody.
If you want to say, look, I expect and I predict that interest rates are going to go up next year, and I have $50,000 in a line of credit on my home that I'm using. So if that interest rate goes up, I'm preparing by having money set aside to pay off my line of credit. Okay, I can get on board with that. And if it doesn't go up, if interest rates don't go up, I'm just going to, you know, continue to let the line exist. Okay, I can get on board with that. But if you're going to, I think interest rates are going to go down, so I'm going to load up on my line of credit, like, mistake. Stop trying to like make, like you're saying, Meg, could be life-altering decisions based upon predictions. I think people do it all the time.
No, I think they do too. It'd be an interesting exercise to like consciously, what decisions am I making based on a guess? I'm saying guess, a prediction. Because I'm sure we all do it like not even realizing it. But we obviously are in a business in roles where we listen to people who want to justify their decision making based on predictions.
Yeah.
Or yes. Want us to provide the prediction in order to justify what they've done or say they want to do.
Or advise them based on these predictions.
Yeah. I met with a client yesterday who has like a handful, like some money in cash that like they need, like they will spend over the course of the next year. And he's like, I mean, now is probably a really good time to get in the market, right?
Oh my God.
I'm like, wait, you just told me that you need this in the next 12 months, like every dollar of it. I was like, it's sitting in cash, dude. We're not doing anything differently. And I was like, do you remember when we sat here this time last year and you wanted to get more conservative? You wanted to reallocate your investments because of where the market was in December of 18? No.
It's so emotional. And people that say part of our value is not helping them manage their emotions, or they're dead wrong. Like, they couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah,
and I find it amazing that, you know, we still get bombarded with emails from the, excuse me, the big, you know, the big firms, the JP Morgans of the world, with their join us for so-and-so's 2020 market outlook.
Ugh.
And I cannot believe that people still listen and pay attention. And I guess I can believe it, because now I put on my skeptical hat, my cynical hat of the industry, which is, plenty of advisors take that information, talk to their clients, communicate that, and that's their value. That I now have this expert insight that I'm gonna guide your portfolio around. That's what they do.
Dude, painting my living room walls would be a more valuable exercise for our clients than me going to a stock market prediction seminar.
Market outlook. Phrase is just so, oh, I hate it.
All right.
The FIRE movement. Were you guys familiar with this before this article?
I'd read several stuff. Articles. They've been out for a while about these early, like super saver early retiree people.
Right? Yeah. So Hilary Hoffauer from Business Insider wrote an article. She kind of like summarized someone else's article, but. It's about a 36-year-old New York lawyer who makes $270,000 and says he lives off of rice and beans so he can save 70% of his salary. He's part of a growing movement of pinching pennies to retire early. So we're talking about the FIRE movement, which stands for Financial Independence Retire Early, that has gained some traction recently. The idea is you save a ton of your salary, like the 70% quoted, to hopefully retire at a much earlier age than otherwise would be deemed, I guess, like traditional.
Mike wants to jump in so bad.
I know. Go.
Well, before I lose that thought, you said it's a growing movement, and I call bullshit, because first of all, as we all know, these journalists are desperate to find things to write about. And I don't think there's a growing FIRE movement at all. I just think that there's a few people that they find that they can write about. And, you know, case in point, we have this article.
Okay.
So that's my point before I forget that one. Keep going.
The strategies employed by these people range from living in very small, cheap homes to eating rice and beans, not going out, going on vacations. Sounds like a pretty miserable existence to me, but I guess some people really hate their jobs. Is that what this is?
No, they're going to be, I mean, by this article, they're financially independent and they have retired early.
Right, but like, why do you want to retire early? Are you that unhappy in your job?
There's no way in hell any of them have retired.
Well, no, I'm just, before we get into the actual financial piece of it, like, what is the motivation to do this?
Yeah, I guess
that's the basic driver. Right, is that people can't stand to work. They can't wait to not be able to work. So they're going to do everything humanly possible to put themselves in a position to get out and get out young, mm-hmm. I guess.
Okay.
But none of them in this article have put themselves in a position to get out young. The 28-year-old with $2 million in the bank. Way to go, man. You have 70 more years that you need to pay for yourself, how is that going to work with $2 million? There's no way in hell that's going to work.
When you're missing income and there's no social security at the end,
what are you going to do?
There's nothing.
This dude who he was earning $270. He literally has a one suit that he patched together. That he wears every day to work. He layers up during the winter, and so he doesn't use his heat. So however long Daniel at age 36 in Manhattan did this sounds horrible. So he basically went through hell for, I'll make it up, 4 years to now not be able to retire.
I'm going to give Daniel a pro tip. If you're going to be a fire person, don't do it in Manhattan.
Right.
Don't live in Manhattan and try to do this.
No.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me that this couple in their 30s now has $1 million in the bank. Okay. What the hell are they going to do? We know 65-year-olds with $1 million in the bank that are going to run out of money.
Yeah. You live this lifestyle where you're sacrificing and pinching pennies for however long to accumulate whatever this number is. It's arbitrary number. And then you have to maintain that same lifestyle as a retired person to be able to make your money last. Like, why? I mean, that does not sound enjoyable. If you hate your job, get a different one.
In Hillary Hoffer-Hauer's defense, the end of it was good. I mean, she pointed out frugality is a good thing, right? And she listed a few things that you should be thinking about, right? Don't spend above your means. Save for retirement, save your paycheck, like live within your, like she listed a few things that were what you should be doing. Commit to saving.
Sure.
Write the article about that, man. Like tell people what they need to do to get themselves financially independent over a reasonable time frame. Because this whole fire thing, that's just about, you know, it's almost like I equate it to like get rich quick. Like, this isn't going to work. Getting rich quick doesn't work. Saving for retirement quickly, it doesn't work. It's not a thing. And the sooner someone comes out and says this is actual bullshit, you're not going to be able to save your $270,000 salary for 3 years and then retire. I mean, it's just not going to – mathematically, it doesn't work.
And just from a person profile perspective, like the Daniels of the world, I hope I never meet one.
Ugh.
Like people that don't value balance in life, I have no time for.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you can figure out how to splurge now and then, spend money now and then, but also be responsible and do it across all aspects of your life, balancing everything, that's winning to me.
Hey, Daniel, you want to go to Arby's tonight? No, dude. I got to rice and beans on the menu.
Daniel would be the worst person to go out with. Could you imagine? Also, maybe not to pick on Daniel, but like, he went to law school. You spent money on law school to work for like 10 years to then retire.
Like, didn't you want to defend people
your whole life? Moving on. Kids. You guys excited to talk about this one?
What do we got?
So Ramp Capital, who is an anonymous Twitter profile, personality, also has a blog. And he wrote an article called Kids Are Expensive. He writes about the cost of raising children and the fact that many people are unprepared for it when it happens because saving for a kid is not really something most people do. According to a 2017 Department of Agriculture study, parents are going to spend somewhere around $233,000 on their kid before turns 18.
That number's low. I think that number's low. Would you agree,
Mike? I would agree.
Like super low?
Not super low, but I think it's low. I mean, I think if I were to add up every dollar that was spent on the children or child between ages 1 and 18, what does that average out to? Like close to $20,000 a year? No.
No, less than that.
No, way like less 10, than like yeah. 7 or 8. Yeah.
But I way mean, also, that, yeah. I didn't have to deal with daycare expenses, so I'm not familiar with the cost, but it sounds like they're like it's mm-hmm. prohibitively expensive and for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky that Melissa stays at home and is a stay-at-home mom, but I do know the cost of daycare, and it is outrageous, man. It's outrageous. And it doesn't get a whole lot cheaper when you add more children.
you know, like Catholic school. It's like, well, I got one kid there.
Oh, no, they don't give you much of a break either. Trust me.
I think the article talked about how people don't, like, how could, I thought the really great point, and maybe it was actually Ben Carlson's point, where they said, no one starts saving for childcare at age 12 to be ready by age 30. Like, what an awesome insight, right? Like, you're going to start paying for childcare at 30. When do you start planning for that? You don't.
No, I think that's the point.
That's the point. Like, no one has a kid and started planning for the expense of that kid unless you wait until you're 40 and have kids.
But even if you did have the epiphany to start planning, you probably have no means to. You have student loans. You have, you know, all your expenses, your living paycheck. You're barely able to put money aside to save, period, right? I mean, how could you?
I will say this, in the 15 to 20 years that I've been advising couples, there is an absolute correlation to how much wealth people have and how many children they have. I'm telling you, man, like, I mean, there's a lot of people that I talk to that just don't have a lot of money or enough money to make it. And the reason is they have multiple children. They put those children through private school. They paid for their colleges. Like, if you are going to spend that kind of money on your kids and you don't make a lot of money a year, like if you're foregoing your 401k savings or your non-qualified savings and that kind of stuff, the kids are the reason you don't have enough money to retire or don't have enough money to last the rest of your life.
So maybe there should be like another vehicle for, like, call it the grandparents of, or the future grandparents of grandchildren, which would be to specifically set aside money that, not for tuition necessarily or not for other things like that, but specifically earmarked to those costs to raise
kids having kids. Yeah.
And maybe have it like some sort of tax advantage thing. Cause we come across lots of clients who don't have grandkids yet and their kids are in their 20s or 30s and maybe it's on the horizon.
Yeah.
Be a nice way to help out.
Yeah, but I think a lot of them are
Giving money.
But those people that are our clients, that their kids are getting ready to have kids, I mean, they're laser focused on their retirement and them having enough. You know, because it's their last 3 to 4 to 5 years that they're going to work, and it's their highest earning years. They're trying to stockpile their savings because they just did all that shit, mm-hmm. right? They just paid for all their kids, mm-hmm. you know, and then they're going to want to start to spoil their grandkids. I don't know if they have the means to, unless you're ultra wealthy, man. And that was my point earlier. Unless you're making really good money, I see all these couples that have decent livings. You know, they make 120, 130, 140,000 a year, but they have 3 kids and they want them all to go to private school, private high school, and they want to pay for their college. Like, don't do it. You're not going to have enough money. Just me? Am I the only one that sees this?
No, I see it. I just think it's the one factor in financial plans that I think we have very, very little ability to change. Like, when clients say, I need money for my kid, like, regardless of what we say, I think that's the one place that they don't listen.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to put the oxygen mask on first before you attend to your kids when the plane's going down. Well, just back to the article about the cost of kids. One of the things that we know firsthand, the cost of sports is insane.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. And there's huge pressure to have all your kids participate in sports. Multiple sports, year-round, whatever it is, club, travel, I would love to see the inflation charts on on youth sports through the years. Dude, I bet you it's bigger than anything.
Just feeding the little bastards, man. I mean, gosh, they eat so damn much, man.
More than you?
No, no one eats more than me.
What is the biggest expense that you guys have had to deal with? Is it sports? Is it education? You both mentioned you didn't really – childcare wasn't part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just – this may be too broad, but just the day-to-day living, right? The day-to-day feeding them, clothing them. They need supplies for school. Like, it's all this stuff that never stops. They got a birthday party for a kid. You got to get a gift. I mean, it's just the day-to-day living
It's every day, and it's not like a Starbucks coffee. You're dropping $50 a day, easy. And if you have multiple kids, it's more than that, man.
Yeah, because every now and then when we have a couple come in and they have no kids and they're older, you're just like, man, no wonder you have so much money. Yeah.
Right, you can't go to Wawa with your kid without getting an extra soda and a snack. And all that shit, it adds up, man.
What about vacations?
Oh, my God. Don't even talk to me about vacation. Because you can't just get one room. You need two. Right? Oh, can I get a smoothie from the bar? Sure. Get another freaking smoothie from the bar. Cha-ching, cha-ching. It's brutal. Yeah. Love them to death, though. Well, you said something about clients and their kids. I mean, we have a client that I was working with who, she doesn't have a ton of money, but she doesn't live crazy. So she's got enough for herself, probably. She tells me that she finds that her kid has like $70,000 in credit card debt. And she's like, how do I pay it off? And I'm like, you don't. You don't have enough. You should not, absolutely do not do this. Did it anyway. And she said the next weekend, her daughter was like spending the weekend in New York with her husband at like a hotel. And she called me and she goes, you are absolutely right. Like, I should not have done it. She hasn't changed any of her behavior. And it was crazy. When you said that earlier, I'm like, you're right. Like, we try so hard to guide our clients, but like financing their kids, it's the hardest thing for us to overcome, that to have them make good financial decisions.
Yeah. Kids, and I'd lump grandkids in there too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Grandkids. Yeah, absolutely.
Top five. So in an attempt to keep or have a Christmas theme, we decided to do the top five Chris's of all time. And this is an ode to Kris Kringle, a.k.a. God, Santa Claus.
Mine are good, man.
We started with Nick's, but full disclosure, there weren't enough Nick's that we wanted to use. Who wants to go first?
Oh, Jeff, sounds like you have the grand finale.
I have a great list of all time.
So maybe we'll hold you out for last.
Okay. All right. That's cool.
All right. I'll go first.
Go ahead, Meg.
I picked these strictly because I like the way all of these people look.
Shirts on or shirts off?
Shirts off, for sure. So there's a lot of Marvel Chris's.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth is Thor.
Thor, right.
Chris Evans is Captain America. Chris Pine. Chris, I had to look up his last name. Maloney, he's Detective Stabler from Law & Order SVU.
Loser.
Oh my God, I love him. Okay, I guess I only had four.
Yeah, no overlap there. Shocking.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, while you're all looking, right, we'll let Mike go.
I'll give you mine. No order on mine, but Chris Rock. I got Chris Carter, Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Yeah.
Loved his game.
He's an announcer now, right?
Yeah.
Play for the Vikings after the Eagles, right?
Yeah. I threw on a Ruth's Chris, because who doesn't love a good steak?
I thought about it. It didn't land on my top five, but I thought about it.
Not that it's the best steakhouse, but hey, it's a Chris, right? And,
it's a steakhouse with Chris.
Yeah. I got Chris Elliott. Funny as hell in Something About Mary and on Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
You know, that guy, the blonde, the weirdo. He's kind of a weirdo.
Oh, like, yeah. Goofy. That's a good one, yeah.
His Woogie.
Yeah.
His face at the end of Something About Mary just kills it for me. I can't look at the guy the same.
And then lastly, this is kind of an obvious, Walken, Christopher Walken. Yeah.
That was your last?
Well, no order. I didn't have an order.
No overlap there. So Chris Tucker, hysterical, super
good
funny.
Good one.
Chris Farley.
R.I.P.
I missed that one.
Chris Long. Won a Super Bowl for us.
Oh, I love Chris Long.
Yeah, I mean, come on, guys.
Hi, son. He's hot, too. He could have made my list.
Christopher Moltisanti.
Excuse me, what?
Christopher Sopranos? Moltisanti.
Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Yeah.
That
accent was horrible.
Christopher.
There you go.
Was that five?
No,
my one last more. One.
Christopher Wallace. Biggie, dude. Like the number
real,
one
like
Christopher.
Name? Like yeah. Given name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's government name. Christopher Wallace, man.
Government. That's a good list.
Okay.
Yeah,
we had zero overlap.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's a first. All right, well, happy holidays, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.